Thank you, Haley, and good morning, everybody. I hope you're in as cheerful a mood as I am. It might be because you've just returned from your holidays. In the case of me, it is our half-year press release and the results. On the back of having agreed on both trade sales and our major forward sale, we feel pretty confident to increase our guidance for the current year. We see the earnings before taxes at a new record of 65 million euros, or 10 million above the previous guidance. Net profit is expected to grow to a level of 47 to 50 million euros, and who would have thought this 3.5 years ago? The range depends on the tax rate, which we still need to assess in the light of the most recent developments, i.e. The sale of the two Disney hotels. I shall come to the details in a moment. Let me only quickly highlight two more bullet points from slide 3. We have also hit a new record high with our 2 billion euro pipeline. And we are confident to see a new higher future earnings level next year and in 2021. But first things first, please follow me to chart 4. At the beginning of the year, and after having delivered a record year in 2018, we felt that repeating such record in a transformation year like 2019 is ambitious enough. We have proven to be too conservative. We now expect EBT in the second half to be at around 35 million euros, after 29 million in the first half, and net profit is expected to grow to 26 to 29 million after solid 21 million in the first half. This would represent an increase of between 18 and 25%. Well, what makes us this confident? The answer can be found, partially at least, on chart number 5. While we have promised you 2 trade and 6 forward sales, we did not believe to be this fast in delivery. Both trade sales and the most important forward sale have been agreed before announcing our half-year numbers. On top of it, sales prices in these transactions exceeded our expectations from the beginning of the year. Please turn to chart number 6. While the sale of our Dornach project is included in our first half-year numbers, the higher-than-budgeted price for our two Disney hotels is only to be included in the second half-year. Please note that the implementation of the Disney hotel transaction is still subject to a positive outcome of the employee consultation process as required by French law, while the closing of the Dornach transaction is subject to financing. The financing of Dornach, however, is secured by a down payment that would be consummated in case financing cannot be achieved by the buyer. This run really made us revise our guidance upward. Now, for me, it is also important to explain the strategic rationale behind the two trade sales, which might also help to explain why such sales are going to belong to the ordinary course of our business as a pure play developer in the future. Dornach has been sold as a project development to create up to 60,000 square meters of office space for the simple reason that the acquisition of the Bauberger logistics plot has led to a too high concentration of rather long-term projects in the Munich area. If you want, we traded a project within the city borders of Munich against a project in one of the suburbs. Of course, this sale is also going to help earnings continuity as Dornach moved from a long-term outperformer to a short-term outperformer in our effort to smoothen our earnings profile. The Disney Hotels transaction is a perfect example of us executing our pure play strategy. We reduce our standing portfolio and deploy our funds into a new, into one or more new development projects. And we did so with maximum prudence. Originally, the hotels were up for sale almost 4 years ago, but with the terrorist attacks in Paris, a number of investors felt discouraged, and so we held the asset back to a point in time where a buyer could attach full value to the performance of these two assets. Let me remind you that we have a total of 366 million euro worth of more standing assets, where we are admittedly not entirely free to choose the point in time to sell as well. But there is no doubt that we are going to sell down these assets. We have approximately 130 million worth of prime assets in Austria, where such trade sale depends on our equity partners and where we are not exactly in the driver's seat. The same is true for Polecki Business Park, but for a different reason, with a value of around 150 million euro for our stake. And where the best point in time to sell might still be to come. You find a detailed slide on this, by the way, in our backup. But let me not get lost in detail and much rather hand over to Patrick to cast a bit more light on our strong half-year financials.
Thank you, Thomas. Good morning, everybody. I'm now on slide number 7. After the slow start into 2019, we had a very good second quarter with an EPS of more than 2.20 euros, bringing the EPS to just over 3 euros for the first half of 2019. Compared to the same period last year, this is an increase of 18.6%. Besides higher earnings before tax, this is also attributable to the composition of our first half-year results when it comes to minority shareholders. We have been able to increase earnings before tax from 28.1 million last year to 29.3 million in 2019. The first half 2019 was characterized by value adjustments reflecting latest negotiation results of meanwhile signed forward deals. This is the reason why the result of the forward deals are reflected in our EBT net income number, but neither in total output nor in revenue. Net fair value adjustments of the reporting period led to a positive earnings contribution of 27.9 million. A major portion of the effect is coming from the contract negotiations for the sale of a site near Munich, as mentioned by Thomas, and from the progress of the municipal approval process of our Sugar Palace Hotel in Prague, which has already been reflected in our Q1 numbers. In addition to that, we had to take a more cautious view on the Leopold Quartier project based on the current permit situation for residential projects in Vienna, and on some standing assets in Poland. Another significant contribution to our result is coming from the companies accounted for at equity. Part of the at equity companies is our flagship office project QVC 1 and 2, which had to be adjusted in value too. Also in this case, the signing of the contract, which has been the basis for our valuation at the end of the first half 2019, has taken place. When looking ahead, both seasonality and demand-supply imbalance are likely to continue when it comes to a quarterly view. Timing issues can always influence our earnings situation, but on the long run, we are optimistic to deliver a sustainable earnings development as we already design our project portfolio this way. Please turn now to slide number 8, which is for most of you a repetition of what has been said in Q1. Stability and the close monitoring of our balance sheet ratios and indicators is key for the financial strength of UBM. Our equity ratio was unchanged at 35% and therefore at the upper end of our target range of 30 to 35%. Net debt remained under control. LTV increased slightly to 38%, which still represents the lower end of the range for a pure play developer and its business model behind. At the same time, we have 182 million cash at hand, which gives us the opportunity to react quickly if needed. To sum it up, solid equity, low leverage, and good firing power. This financial strength is not only appreciated by our shareholders, but also by our bond investors, as you can see on slide number 9. UBM is also well established on the debt market. We are a recurring and reliable bond issuer with 8 bonds since 2005. Within the last 2 years alone, we tapped the capital market 4 times with an overall volume of 370 million. All of the bonds are showing a strong aftermarket performance. We also worked successfully on introducing different instruments and different investor classes, be it with classical bonds, promissory notes, tappings, or hybrids. Besides the fact that we worked successfully on our debt market standing, we were able to significantly reduce the risk premium investors are willing to accept when it comes to UBM. Our risk premium for the bond has almost dropped by half in recent years and equaled 250 basis points when we tapped our 318 bond and raised 45 million in June. This brings us into a position to refinance at more favorable rates than ever. It represents a major competitive advantage compared to most non-listed developers, which have to refinance themselves with expensive mezzanine capital, often with interest rates north of 10%, even in the current market environment. But also some other stock market-listed developers with a weaker balance sheet have to pay way more when refinancing themselves. It goes without saying that this advantage makes our projects more profitable and project acquisitions easier. Back to Thomas.
Yes, and back to another highlight, our record level pipeline. You can find this on chart number 10. We are particularly proud to inform you of having reached a 2 billion pipeline for the first time ever. Let me also remind you that this pipeline is for the next 3.5 years only. Everything which comes beyond the 31st of December 2022, like the major mega project Bauberger Straße, the logistics project that I've just mentioned before, which still requires rezoning, is not included. On top of this, our pipeline logic follows the total output logic. This means that we are only showing our share of the project should we do it in joint venture with somebody else. Let me give you an example. The CTB Central Tower Berlin, or Moxie Tower, as it is called by some of our peers, the Moxie Tower in Berlin is only entered with 50% of its value in our pipeline, as we have a 50% joint venture partner. Now, the increase of our pipeline by 200 million euros is due to the acquisition of a major residential project in Vienna's 5th district, in Siebenbrunnengasse, and the increased sales price of QVC 1, 2, and 7 with the respective impact. Looking at the right-hand side of the slide, number 10, we are once more able to prove that we are executing our strategy. We walk the talk. As Europe's leading hotel developer, almost half of our pipeline is made up by hotel projects. More than a third is contributed by residential, and the remaining 20% by office and other. Again, and hopefully without arrogance, we are very proud of this high quality 2 billion pipeline. Another reason for being proud can be found on chart 11. UBM is extremely focused, not only when it comes to our three asset classes, but also when it comes to geography. We are focused on 12 metropolitan areas in Europe. In Austria, it is mostly Vienna and a little bit Graz. And as you know, Vienna hosts 25% of Austria's population. In the more decentralized countries like Germany and Poland, we focus on 5 of the 7 A cities in Germany and 4 major cities in Poland. On top of it comes Prague and The Hague. In the future, our focus might widen to a total of 15 cities or be reduced to 10 cities. But we want to stay in the bullseye of 2 megatrends, city tourism and urbanization. Both trends have been described in the past, and you find further supporting slides again in the backup. Before coming to the end of this presentation, I want to assure you that with all the success, we do not lose our sense of reality. Slide 12 is not supposed to pour water into the wine. However, the development business is facing a number of challenges, and we are fully aware of them. The number one challenge is acquiring new projects after more than a decade of boom. No doubt, we are struggling with this every day, but we have three competitive advantages. One, we are the market leader in the hotel development business in Europe. Number two, we have strong financials and privileged access to the capital markets. Patrick already expanded on this. And three, in all our markets, we have a long-standing presence and have developed a reputation of reliability. The second challenge is the duration and the obstacles we face to obtain building permits. This might be particularly true for Vienna and Berlin, but it is an industry-wide challenge, and I guess we have to deal with it as everybody else. Regarding construction costs, UVM is in a somewhat privileged position, as our heritage is strongly linked to construction, and so is about 50% of our workforce. This makes us less dependent on finding a general contractor, and rather puts us in a position to do package or even single contracting to eliminate the general contractor risk premium for not finding subcontractors at the right price. Finally, and this is a challenge I personally have zoomed in this year, is how do we find qualified people? Our answer to this is threefold. One, we put more efforts into employer branding than we ever did before. And for those of you who are on the social media networks, you might have noticed this. Two, we grow the next generation of our leaders ourselves. Three, we try to offer a working environment which differentiates us from others. I shall keep you posted on the progress, but also on the setbacks in this respect. Which brings me to the last slide, slide number 13. 2019 is no extraordinary year. The contrary is the case. 2019 was planned to be a year of transformation. As described, it turns out to be more than that. 2020 shall see this new and, if you want, higher sea level of profitability. A look into our pipeline and the expected forward sales of, for example, five more of our 16 hotels which we have in the pipeline, together with the percentage of completion attributable profits, will make the upward revised 2019 level the new starting base for 2020. Subject to tailwind, in form of low interest rates continuing through 2021, we shall see the ultimate proof for sustainable higher earnings and more growth in 2021. A precondition for all of this is to stay selective on new projects which we acquire, the size and project mix, and the prudence of forward sales and down payments. I hope you share our optimism, and Patrick and me are almost shivering in anticipation of your questions. Thank you for your attention. I open now the line for your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we will begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. And one moment for the first question, please. The first question comes from the line of Stefan Scharf of SRC Research. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Stefan here from SRC. I have a couple of questions. The first question is regarding the sale of the Paris hotels, which might come in the second half of the year. In yesterday's call of IMPEX, the guys told that the pre-tax profit could be around 14 million. So if we take this into conclusion and see your lift of guidance by 10 million, perhaps it's not too much. Perhaps you can explain here a little bit more if your higher guidance now is just based on the Paris story or on which trades you base your new guidance. And I like the QBC story and this good sale which you mentioned with your press release last week. But looking at your P&L, the effects just come, I think, in 2020 or more in 2021. So this is the first question. The second question is, you bring up your pipeline from 1.8 billion to 2.0 billion. But there are some long-term mega projects not included. You already mentioned Munich, but perhaps there are some more mega projects which you did not mention. Perhaps you can say a little bit more about your pipeline and your plans for the time after 2022. And then slide 36, in the backup of your presentation, you talk a bit about Poleczki. Poleczki is about 150 million standing assets at the moment, and you say it's a lump investment. So you have a feeling or an opinion how you could the sales here could go forward to bring down the exposure for Poleczki a little bit. And the next question would be your.
Stefan, let me suggest the following. Let me interrupt you here, and then we carry on with the question so that we don't forget
Okay,
one.
fine. That's
Okay.
great. Okay.
Okay. So, Stefan, I'm happy to start with the first one, which was the question regarding our trade sales. So, as Thomas has pointed out in the presentation, trade sales is in the DNA of UBM. So it's also finding its way into our internal plans, which in the end of the time, it is also the basis for any kind of guidance. So when we start a guidance, we also look for sure at the trade sales. We have planned two trade sales this year. The one is Donna, the other one you mentioned because it has been yesterday announced by Varimpex, which is a subsequent event to the first half. What is true is that the trade sales went a bit better than we originally expected, and this is also a bit the reason why we increased the guidance, but that is not the only reason. And this is how we look at that. The second thing is you have talked about QBC. QBC is in our numbers as a net equity. We had a strong impact from the at equity result in the first half, and the reason for that is predominantly the QBC, because there at the moment when I'm sure that the value can be appreciated, and we have already signed the deal meanwhile, I have to increase it after IAS 40, and I get the result immediately into my books. So a good piece of the result, which is to be expected from QBC 1.2, is already in our books and is in the first half. What you can't see now is any kind of top-line effects or overall effects, because that is coming later.
Okay.
And that's important because, of course, some of the headlines read like we have a downturn in the top line. Come on, guys. We said we would have a slow start, and we said we won't have the spectacular completions that we had in 2018. And with the, accounting rules being as they are, we have no choice. We have no choice than to appreciate the values once we have signed an LOI or even a contract. Okay? But the top line will follow. It's following just with a delay. Coming to your second question, and the pipeline. I keep on telling you that we might be somewhat overly conservative in the way we present ourselves, because I know that some of our peer companies, even if they only have 10% in a contract, present the whole size of the contract. We don't do that because we want to give you an opportunity to also guesstimate the total output of our sales activities. And you can't do that if we give you, Moxie Tower with the full volume to come back example. What we haven't included, and there's a big discussion also going on with us, is we always go for a four-year time horizon and then shrink it to 3 years as the year continues and add the next year only following. With this very strict rule, in order not to, forgive my English, bullshit ourselves, okay, we are, of course, also seeing a different, you know, animal with our pipeline.
Okay.
It's very concrete with the Bauberger Straße, because the Bauberger Straße, we've always said, is a long-term, hopefully, of course, outperformer, but it needs rezoning, and rezoning takes approximately 3 to 4 years in Munich, if you have a favorable look at it, and we very closely cooperated with the authorities from the very beginning, and it's in a residential area. So there is some good confidence, but even with this and with all the need of more residential development, it takes its time. And so it's outside the pipeline. It might start to get entered when we presented it the pipeline end of the year, because then we add 2023. Right? But also not with its full effect, because we then follow the percentage of completion method and try to allocate the a three-year project over 3 years. Hopefully not too much technical detail.
But that means the Bauberger Straße is a mix of logistics and resi. It's more logistics, but also a little bit resi or nothing?
No, Stefan, good question, because I'm sometimes not clear enough. It used to be a huge logistics plot with 105 gates, because I've learned from Bertolt Wild that you assess the size of a logistics plot by its gates, but it's also almost 3 hectares. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now the zoning, we don't want logistics there, or I should rather say the city of Munich doesn't want to continue with logistics there, because it's a residential area now. So now we try to find the sweet spot of residential development, but also and I have to say this in German, störendes Gewerbe, which is an ugly word for the people that do the air conditioning or whatever, and now have to bring all their material from, say, Augsburg or wherever they are coming from, because the storage area is so big. So this takes time, okay? And this is why we haven't included it in the current time horizon. I guess Patrick has also answered the Dornach question. Dornach has been entered in the first half year according to the IFRS accounting rules. So from the first part of your question, the only remaining is the one on Polecki and slide 36. I'm very grateful that you pointed out slide 36. Because it's one of the slides that should bring some more clarity and transparency to our standing assets, because it's clustering our standing assets. And it kind of gives you a feeling, you know, for A, the potential time horizon, and B, the potential reward that we get out of it.
Mm.
Polecki, you're absolutely right. With Polecki, the thing is, it's 94% rented. Okay, so it's a very fully rented asset. However, with our pure play developer strategy, it has no justification to stay on our balance sheet. Okay, and it holds us to a certain extent almost back in Poland, because with our portfolio theory access to subjects, we feel that we don't want to get overexposed in Poland. Now, Polecki is consisting of 6 separate buildings, and we always wanted to sell these 6 buildings in one deal. The reason is because we don't want to have a cannibalization that when a tenant's agreement expires in building number one, okay, the building number three owner is kind of trying to poach this one. Maybe we've been overly cautious, because looking more deeply into Polecki, we are now wondering if it couldn't be broken up. This would make it an easy to sell asset. And on top of it, in my presentation, I also hinted at the new situation of the pension funds in Poland. So it might also be that pension funds in Poland get more interested in this type of asset, and particularly this size of asset. I hope this answers your question. Further questions, please.
The refinancing conditions, you mentioned they are good, and you bring some new bonds or PEP. And so what may we expect here in future in the second half of the year or also for 2020? As you say, your pipeline will rise and,
Okay. I'm happy to take this one. For in terms of pipeline, the pipeline and what Thomas has explained, that is for sure already financed currently. So I don't need to go immediately to the market in order to refinance ourselves. Conditions currently, and you have recognized that probably the swap rate has further dropped. So on the slide, you see a swap rate which is minus 10. Meanwhile, we have seen even swap rates which were below 50 basis points, so minus 50. The question is that just an effect we see for a short term, or is it a longer term effect? And if conditions will stay where they are, we will think about if we tap the market again or not. So I have no concrete plans, but nevertheless, we closely monitor what is happening there, and if times are really turn out to be super, we will also think about going to the market again.
Okay. If I look at slide 12, you speak about the acquisition of new projects and that it's a challenge and there is some competition in the market, of course. So is growth by M&A deals also an option for you?
Well, look, we are never excluding anything and outruling anything. Of course, when we talk about acquisition of new projects, we are talking about acquisition of single projects and how we shift the risk appetite in the different categories, because you have basically the location. Okay, we don't compromise on the location. We only go for prime locations and prime cities. You have the pricing, okay, which depends a little on your expectations regarding future yield compression, yes or no. Then you have, of course, all the legal risks involved with obtaining zoning whatever. And then you have the project size. And here I think we've really developed into a new dimension, because for us it is possible, and I've pointed this out, to acquire several projects that are 100 million euros or more at the same time if we wanted.
Okay. And slide 13 is the description of the next 2 years, and you say 2020 you have a new C level. I think the same, but is it too early in your view to give us a guidance for 2020, or to say at least, of course, you expect the profits and perhaps also the dividends to rise?
Well, Stefan, it's definitely too early. We are just coming back from the summer break 2019. And originally, I refused to give a guidance before our 9 month results, because we are in a volatile business and Patrick expanded on seasonality. So I think what we've put on paper on slide number 13, okay, is for us bold enough, because you know we only promise what we are almost 100% convinced to deliver. And in this respect, I think what we tried to point out is the world has changed in so far as we believe that low interest rates are going to continue, and with low interest rates being where they are, there is a flight into hardcore assets. And this is real estate. Great questions.
Thank you.
That's it anyway. Wonderful. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Christine Reutsamer of Baader Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Christine speaking. I have three questions. The first concerns disposal margins. You already mentioned that for the recently announced deals that prices were better than expected. What's the overall picture? Because my basic modeling assumption is a 15, maybe in good cases 20% margin, and I have the impression that that is at the moment rather on the conservative side, because strong demand continues. So that's the first question. Should I continue or should
you? Yes, please.
The second question relates to the valuation result. The valuations, you mentioned that there were, I think, two negative contributions from Leopold Quartier in Vienna and some Polish assets. Could you just quickly comment on that? What was the main driver behind these the negative outcomes there? And the last question is a pretty general one on the regulatory and political environment, particularly regarding the whole residential topic that we have in Berlin at the moment, but also in Vienna. You have a higher share of social housing regulations. I think Munich is for the time being safe haven there. But just your view on the noise, what you think about it. You probably won't react directly to it, but what could trigger a change in your strategy? And very broad question regarding that.
Tough questions as the ones from Stefan. Look, on disposal margins, I think we have to distinguish between two cases. The one is the standing assets. Now, with the standing assets, we should actually make no profits because we value them at the end of the year and we have to value them to market, okay? Still, the development is such that because of a shortage of available assets, okay, there is good price competition, and we also might be somewhat conservative, or I shouldn't say us, I should say the surveyors are always trying to be on the safe side when they do valuations. And so there develops a gap that is helpful, because we definitely, if we get a price range, don't put in the upper end of the price range in our book values. Okay, so that's the one. The other story is, and you're right on on forward sales. Okay, and here we have a big kind of internal debate always going on. How long do we wait for forward sales? Now you know that we love to do and always be on the safe side and do forward sales at the start of construction. We haven't done so with QBC 1, 2, and 7, okay, because there was a speculative element that prices will improve as the demand continues to be high and the supply is shrinking, okay? And here it's also always dependent. Both SIMO and us don't enjoy a reputation on the market that we squeeze out the last euro from our buyers, because we like to have repetitive buyers. But of course, our buyers are all super professional institutional investors. They know where the market is. And I guess the only pointing that I can give is the market is still moving, i.e. the yield compression has slowed down, but it didn't come to an end. And maybe in 1.5 years, you're blaming us for forward selling QBC 1 and 2 1.5 years ahead of completion, because the yield compression might continue. And this is a trade-off between security and insurance always costs, and greed to get more. And in so far, please don't go overboard in your modeling exercise, because we also said, that the margins that we are achieving at the moment look pretty much, as having hit the ceiling.
Yeah.
Christine, on your valuation results and the question you had regarding the LeopoldQuartier and the Polish item we have looked at. So first of all, for the Leopold one has to see when we acquired it and the permits we had, we took certain assumptions. One of the assumptions was that the residential piece, which is a smaller one, but nevertheless a piece of the overall development we have acquired there, can be done with a 50% split between freely sold apartments and apartments which are sponsored, which is a special thing in Vienna, but other cities in Europe are starting this kind of thing as well. That has changed meanwhile. So the Vienna legislation has a new ruling out saying 2/3 of it should be a sponsored residential area and only 1/3 could be sold freely. We are in close negotiations with the Vienna legislation, but we had to take that into account at the half year because the signals went into a direction that the 2/3 rule has to be applied for us as well. The second piece of the explanation why we looked at the LeopoldQuartier and have a new valuation there has to do with the hotel piece, which is also a part of the development there. And there is an existing building on that piece of land where we wanted to do the hotel. We have a permit to do so, but we were optimizing that existing building in a way. And that was under a paragraph called 69. And there is a gray zone in this paragraph saying you could do single adjustments to a building in order to optimize it. And we found out that the current legislation sees that more strictly than originally seen when we have acquired it last year. And that makes the optimization of the building very differently to what we thought. And therefore, the hotel development is just a bit different than we thought. And that is the reason why we applied that in the new value and why we had to apply that in the new value so that we hadn't had any choice there. The second piece you have asked was the Polish one. That is a far more smaller adjustment, but nevertheless, that is a piece of land where we wanted to do a retail and where we thought we can maybe do a residential as well. We meanwhile found out that the residential idea is very, very much in the future. So the discussions we had with the legislation didn't work in the way we have expected them. So we are back at the retail plot, and the retail plot has not the same value for us than the residential one. And that's the reason we applied the new value.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, a final question. The only comfort that I can give you is that Patrick and I have a common past, having worked in a regulatory environment, the telecoms environment, and so we take it serious. I think real estate development as a business, as an industry, don't find the right English word, has to a certain extent underestimated the social pressure. In Q1, we tried to give a bit of a lecture, also the wrong word, that it's not true what you always hear on TV, that residential living is unaffordable. In some cities, if you compare it with household income, if you add the inflation rate, and what is most important, if you look at the financing costs of residential, it is even coming down. But I'm not trying to talk something small. It is a real issue. Okay, we know it from our managing directors in the field, if you want. Okay. And it's, I think, the mood that goes against us. And to be a bit self-critical, I must say, as an industry, we remind myself a bit of the car industry. We were completely caught by surprise, because in the past, we were the guys who provided the apartments, and now we are the guys who are kind of, suffocating the people and we've never provided living area out of, pro bono reasons. That was wrong. But we are also not now trying to take advantage of the poor people who otherwise live on the street. And look at the cities, even like Munich or Berlin, even the city centers, they are not empty. People live there. I think the problem exists with the nurse or the policeman who comes from outside Munich or wherever, okay, and now tries to find living, and we have to find answers for this. So we don't underestimate it. It will have an impact, by the way, and it's not the impact that politics wants, because the impact is going to be that we hold back, okay? Because definitely for the land bank that has been acquired by some of our peers, because we don't have too much of a land bank, they've calculated different ratios of subsidized living and free financed living, and they will be struggling.
Okay, thank you. That's all from my side.
The next question comes from the line of Christian Bader of RCB. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I have three different questions on the same topic. First of all, regarding your new guidance for 2019, Warenbeck explicitly mentioned in their letter to the shareholders that the net profit effect for them from the sale of the two Paris hotels would be 14 million euros. And so therefore, I would assume the same impact on your side. That's my first question. The second one has to do again with the valuation impact from the signed sale of QBC 1 and 2 that you recognized in your associate income. I was wondering if it's possible to quantify the, let's say, the amount of development profits that is attributable to you, or let's say, how much of the development profits from this large project did you already realize in the second quarter? And my last question has to do with your pipeline. A lot has been discussed now about the Leopold Quartier. However, so far, I did not understand whether the potential the sale or realizations from that particular project is included in this 2 billion euros guidance or whether it's not.
Yeah. Also tough questions. Very good. Look, as a rule, we are not disclosing single project profits. And that is not our unwillingness for transparency, because the buyers usually want to negotiate confidentiality on the purchase price even, so we give you the purchase prices and give you with the square meters and everything a way that you can calculate this. Your assumption with Warenbeck is wrong, and I'm not here to comment on Warenbeck's accounting and the other way around, but it can be completely different in the case of the one company and in the case of the other company. It depends on what book values you attach at the end of the year, blah, 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 blah. So it would be too quick an assumption to say, well, if they had 14 million, I'm not sure if it's net profit or if it's pre-tax profit, but it doesn't matter. Yeah, okay, it doesn't matter. To jump to the conclusion that also results because we are 50% partner in a 14 million net profit on our side, because as I said, it depends on how we accounted for it. And I don't know if Patrick wants to add something to this. Let me just add to the last question. The last question was regarding Leopold Quartier. Leopold Quartier is partially included in the pipeline, because here we don't have a rezoning, or we thought we don't have a rezoning problem and everything. But it is, of course, always a moving target as to when you plan to start a project and how it's continued. And it could very well be that the delay, that Leopold Quartier is delayed and therefore moved into 2023 or later. It doesn't change anything on the 20 on the 2 billion pipeline. So it was partially included in the 2 billion pipeline, but it was already partially included before we raised the pipeline from 1.8 to 2 billion. The raising of the pipeline from 2 billion had something to do with Siemponengasse, some smaller acquisitions, and as I said, price expectations that we had to revise upwards because we had it lower in our assumptions than we ultimately signed LOIs for it.
Okay. You had a question to the QBC, if I got you right, and the question how much of this is in the at equity. So the at equity contributed roughly 13 million to the result, and that is a number after tax because it is a profit which is already taxed when it comes into our books. That is the rule for how it is accounted. And roughly, you can say, three quarters of that is coming from the QBC and the new value we have attached to the QBC.
Okay, but if I understood one of your previous answers, you've only partially included the, let's say, expected development profits that are attributable to you. Am I right?
Yes, that is correct, because we are in the stage that this is erected. I mean, it has meanwhile signed, but we are in the stage of erecting. There are still some uncertainties on the profits. So at that point in time, you take a cautious view on that, for sure, yeah.
And it's percentage of completion.
Afterwards, yeah.
Okay, and maybe a follow-up on the Leopold Quartier. I remember when you announced it, I think the potential output value was some 450 million, if I remember correctly. How much of that is now partially included in the pipeline?
I would have to look it up. I don't know off the top of my head. But if you take two-thirds view, but let me come. We see each other at lunch. Let me come back to you on this one. And I understand the detailed questions. For me, it comes as a bit as a surprise that nobody is asking us on what makes you so confident about 2020 and 2021, because I think in this case you clearly see a change in our cautiousness, and as I said, this change is mainly grounded on the fact that we don't believe in any interest rate increases. Okay. But it, of course, also has something to do with the fact that the current situation really turned into a seller's market. So we believe that there is no danger whatsoever that yield expectations from investors are going to increase again. And we see investors who moved to other countries where they hoped for more yield are coming back because it's a good, you know, a value for money that you get in the markets in which we are active. So I think the thing that was a bit under questioned was the fact that we take a very positive midterm view, and knowing us now for almost 4 years, you know, that we wouldn't do that if we hadn't good indications of where we believe that the forward sales that are in the pipeline, and just look at our two pages of detailed pipeline, that this is going to materialize with a very high degree of certainty.
That's it for me then. Thank you.
Thank you.
As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone. And there are no further questions at this time. I would like to hand back to Thomas Winkler for closing comments.
Thank you, Haley. It was always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for your questions. If the quantity of questions is representative for the increase in share price, I'm very confident on the news that we've released. And welcome back to work for those who just returned from holidays, and goodbye.